following show is closed captioned for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
I had my first pit fire in the backyard this weekend of the year. Saturday, at least in this part of the state, was, I thought, nicer than they billed. I'm not saying it was great. Yesterday was an absolutely glorious day. Went to the driving range. Should have skipped it. Did a lot of stuff outside. The dog is in doggy heaven. I mean, she's getting more long walks. It's just, it's about time. Do you realize next Monday is Memorial Day? For crying out loud. It's going to be just like last year, where the 4th of July is going to feel like Memorial Day because everything is so late. But we're kind of getting back on track. I think I'm going to do it this hour. If not, I'm going to do it next hour. I have a follow-up. All right, we talked a lot about Michael Sam. There is another potential NFL rookie, and it's a connection to the Green Bay Packers. You combine that guy and you combine Michael Sam, and you have a great lesson for college graduates entering the working world. This is not a sports topic. So just, it's not a sports topic. It is born in sports, but it's not a sports topic. We'll get to that later in the show. I'm going to start with one that I did not discuss at all last week. And I want to spend a fair amount of time on it right now because it, too, this topic transcends the topic itself to a much bigger topic. You're talking so cryptically. Maybe that's because I watched Mad Men last night. Mad Men, this whole season, very cryptic in its messaging. All right, so I will be less cryptic here. I'm talking about the story, the topic, the issue of now former executive director of the New York Times, Jill Abramson. As you are likely aware, and other talk shows have spent a lot of time on this, I haven't, and there was a development in it over the weekend. Jill Abramson was history-making as the first female executive editor of the New York Times. She was very unceremoniously sacked last week, and immediately allegations in a rival New York paper arose that it's because she was complaining that she made less money than her male predecessor. You know, the gender gap. Now, this immediately brought delight. The first place I saw it last week was hotair.com. Because the New York Times, the leading liberal rag when it comes to pushing all the liberal talking points, including the phony gender pay gap. And it is as phony as New York Times objectivity. It's completely false. But the narrative continued, even though the New York Times insisted, no, that's not why Jill was let go. No. However, the story persisted, and it would not go away. So on Saturday, the publisher, Arthur Pinch Sulzberger Jr., his dad's nickname was Pug, his nickname is Pinch, kind of like he's a pinch of the pug. Here is what he sent out over the weekend, Saturday. Perhaps the saddest outcome of my decision to replace Jill Abramson as executive director of the New York Times is that it has been cast by many as an example of the unequal treatment of women in the workplace. Rather than accepting that this was a situation involving a specific individual who, as we all do, has strengths and weaknesses, a shallow and factually incorrect storyline has emerged. Fueling this have been persistent but incorrect reports that Jill's compensation package was not comparable with her predecessors. This is untrue. Jill's pay package, you notice he doesn't say salary, was comparable with Bill Keller's. In fact, by her last full year as executive director, it was more than 10% higher than his, her last full year. Equal pay for women is an important issue in our country, one the New York Times often covers, but it doesn't help to advance the goal of pay equality to cite the case of a female executive whose compensation was not, in fact, unequal. In other words, it doesn't help the cause to point out our hypocrisy. You know, you're really not helping the cause. Now, I don't know whether they're telling the truth or not. I don't know whether Jill Abramson is telling the truth or not. I don't know. I don't know if she was making less than Keller. I don't know that. Here's going to be my point, though. It's not important. I'll get to that in just a moment. I decided that Jill could no longer remain as executive director for reasons having nothing to do with pay or gender. As publisher, my paramount duty is to ensure the continued quality and success of the New York Times. Jill is an outstanding journalist and editor, but with great regret, I concluded that her management of the newsroom was simply not working out. During her tenure, I heard repeatedly from her newsroom colleagues, women and men, about a series of issues, including arbitrary decision-making, a failure to consult and bring colleagues with her, inadequate communication, and the public mistreatment of colleagues. I discussed these issues with Jill herself several times and warned her that unless they were addressed, she risked losing the trust of both masthead and newsroom. She acknowledged that there were issues and agreed to try to overcome them. We all wanted her to succeed. It became clear, however, that the gap was too big to bridge, and ultimately I concluded she had lost the support of her masthead colleagues and could not win it back. So on Wednesday, he let her go. So what they're saying is, look, she was just a problem employee. Oh, well, I don't believe you. Just the same way the New York Times and other liberal outfits just simply don't believe employers when they say there are rational explanations for why there is pay inequality or for why women are let go. You don't believe it then, so we're not going to believe you now. Oh, it's different when it's you, huh? Now we're supposed to completely believe the employer. When it's not you, we are supposed to completely believe the employee. Oh, don't point that thing at us. And then they actually have one of their columnists, David Carr, write a piece that posted online yesterday saying, yeah, it looks to me like my newspaper's telling the truth. Oh, shocking that he reached that conclusion. Again, I don't know. The Times might be telling the truth. Abramson might be telling the truth. My guess is the truth falls somewhere in the middle. That for a large chunk of her tenure, she was underpaid, but she's also a pain in the butt. It's entirely possible both are true. Not underpaid, but paid less. I shouldn't say that. Paid less than her predecessor. Jennifer Rubin, conservative columnist at the Washington Post, wrote this piece. I want to share it with you. It's almost as if Karl Rove secretly took over the New York Times for sheer delight in mocking liberals. If so, he really is the mad genius whom liberals fear. The New York Times' Jill Abramson story, more like a farce, has become something only conservatives could dream up. Consider the following scenario. The most revered liberal media outlet in the country fires its first woman executive editor. Then his bastion of gender politics and wage gap obsession is accused of firing her in retaliation for her complaints that she was paid less than males who've held the job. Liberal media pundits buy this hook, line, and sinker and viciously turn on the Times. The Times is outraged, sputtering mad that an aggrieved ex-employee should make such a scurrilous charge. There are explanations, context, and nuance in these cases, the Times discovers. And besides, aggrieved ex-employees will make up all kinds of excuses to explain their terminations. Finally, the Times, in a fit of pique, lets it rip. She was the boss from hell, in their telling, and then they dumped the story in Politico's lap. According to the Times, she deceived her boss on a key hiring move, prompting a key co-worker, now her successor, to threaten to quit. According to the Times, their colleagues in the liberal media are a bunch of rumor-mongering saps who are prone to accept any accusation of gender bias as the gospel truth. Their iconic ex-editor, who became a role model for women in journalism, is, well, according to the Times, a liar playing victim to disguise her own dishonesty, something they never accept at face value when another company uses it as a defense. That was me. Now back to Rubin. If a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged, perhaps a responsible newspaper is a liberal one that got smeared in the gender victim game. But don't get your hopes up that the Times, editorially speaking, will address gender bias with more skepticism. Compartmentalization is essential for ideologues. Too many messy facts. The Times may have it wrong, of course. In Jill Abramson's version, via her leak to The New Yorker and then her fans in MSM land, she was tough and accomplished, vilified for the same behavior tolerated in men. She, too, was a victim of gender bias, and like Joan of Arc, was burned by the Times, a martyr to her cause. Lying, bullying, what a bit of nonsense, she would claim. But here, too, the irony is palpable. She co-authored a book and rose to fame on her demonization of now Justice Clarence Thomas. Could it be that powerful people's slight flaws and occasional behavior gets exaggerated, magnified, and distorted in the retelling so they become, in the public eye, someone barely recognizable to them and those who know them best? In other words, a taste of her own medicine. She caricaturized Clarence Thomas, and now perhaps this is what's happening to her. Either way, there is much for conservatives to enjoy as the liberal media thrash and squirm, caught on the hook of identity politics. Whatever you believe and whichever telling is the truth, it should be a lesson for reporters who reflexively side with everyone with a good yarn, about victimhood, for liberals who confuse the Times for their religion, and for those who reduce every human encounter to race, gender, or sexual orientation. As an aside, the Times recently ran a piece bemoaning the lack of openly gay CEOs at big companies. Before leading a new diversity quest, maybe the Times should see how many openly gay people run media outlets. And if there are none, consider if this factual nugget is meaningful. Conservatives can enjoy this comedy while it lasts. After they finish ripping each other's reputations to shreds, the liberal media will be back to attacking the conservatives in the war on women, running interference for Democrats, and pursuing the next quest to show Justice Sonia Sotomayor had it right in the recent affirmative action case, i.e., American rubes are hopeless bigots. But their pristine image of moral superiority will be a bit blemished, and their knee-jerk accusations of bias may just be met with a tad more skepticism. No, probably not. By the way, Jennifer Rubin, The Washington Post. No, probably not. They'll go back to being morally superior, and the next time someone else is accused of gender bias, they won't consider their own warts at all, and neither will their liberal lackeys. But I have a question for you. Okay, here's the way this is being set up. She was a lousy boss. There's just no gray area here. She was a lousy boss, or she's a victim of gender bias. Now, as I said, some of both might be true. They may have lowballed her, and she may have been a lousy boss. It's also possible that the things in which a woman they consider a lousy boss, assertiveness, aggressiveness, as it's been said, she's pushy. Things that are not criticized in a man. Behavior then a man is considered forceful. That's leadership. In a woman, it rhymes with rich. That's another possibility. There's another possible element in this. And it's one the Times would never admit. And it would further make them flaming hypocrites if I'm right about this. What's another possibility of what's going on here? I don't want to be any more specific than that, or I'll give it away. 406-1360, 888-455-1360. What's something else that I think is very likely going on here? It's 921.
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.